Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Live with Tex and Rex, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, wishing everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year as we approach the final countdown. And no, I'm not talking about the final countdown to some made-up fiscal cliff. We're talking about the final countdown to the removal of that piece of useless beef jerky, John Boehner, as Speaker of the House on January 3rd, and also getting rid of little Prince Pubic as Chairman of the RNC. I'm joined by my co-host.
Hey, this is Tex, broadcasting from deep within the snows of Alaska. I am about shoulder deep, so if you hear my muffled voice, I will have gone under the snow for a bit. Actually, I'm in Texas. It's just freaking freezing cold here. You know why Texans live in Texas? Because we don't like the cold. And apparently, it's now settled over us. And I've seen pictures of Alaska, but it feels like Alaska here now. So I am broadcasting from outside in Texas, and hopefully trying to stay warm and trying to brace myself in case I go over some sort of physical or even fiscal cliff this holiday season.
How's that global warming working out for you down there in Texas?
it's awesome. I wish the global warming would concentrate somewhere around my chest and or nether regions in order to heat me even warmer than I am. But I'm pretty bundled up. Unfortunately, I, like most Texans, do not have a pair of gloves near me on a moment's notice, but I sure could use them now.
Understood. Well, a lot of our listeners and some in chat are wondering why you are outside, but I believe it's because you are partaking of the holiday revelry. Am I correct?
Yes, holiday revelry, and I have been kicked out of the house, and so I'm locked outside, frantically beating to try to get back in, but my family will not let me back in. No, I'm, yes, at a relative's house and trying not to annoy them, so you may from time to time hear various noises, screams, squeaks, squeals, laughter, or yelling, you never know, and that will be not me, but people near me.
Understood. And as everybody knows, Rex usually broadcasts from outside because I need to partake of the fresh air. But what we're talking about here, well, it looks like everybody in the Imperial City, at least as far as I can see, is working really hard to sell you a bunch of bullshit. They are having negotiations and meetings.
And, oh, wait.
And the yeah, going over that, fiscal cliff, $1.2 trillion, $1.6 trillion, do I hear? Yeah, that's basically how it's going. And the simple fact is, you know, the Washington established media is all on Twitter because they get to report on the fiscal cliff and interview everybody and pit the liberal Democrats against the conservative Republicans. And it's all very exciting, and it's all untrue because the very simple fact is that it's all crap. They built this, and when I say they, the Republicans built this thing in 01 and 03 by putting sunset provisions in the, quote, Bush tax cuts, and then this whole sequestration thing and all this other crap, which Obama signed, so he owns this damn thing as much as they do, and now they're scurrying at the last minute to prevent us from falling off this fiscal cliff, which will be a disaster for the country. Hey, I hate to break it to you. We fell off the fiscal cliff in 1933. We crashed on the rocks in 1971. And now we've got these two fools, and by fools I mean obviously the president and the Speaker of the House, playing this game, pussyfooting and pretending to be, you know, negotiating about something, when in fact they probably already know exactly what's going to happen. And my suspicion is that late tomorrow evening, as you're all celebrating the ringing in of the new year, they'll pounce on us with whatever deal they've already made. So
essentially, I think the gist of the negotiation, if I could break it down, is that the Democrats don't want a deal because they think they can blame it on the Republicans, and really the politics of it to them is much more important than the actuality and whether or not it damages the nation or the economy. It's all about pin the tail on the donkey, which is what Washington, D.C. excels at. Who will take the blame for this, and will it be good for my team or my party, not will it be good for my country or my constituents? And that really is the essence of the problem with Washington. And for their part, John Boehner has been playing the, oh, we have to cut spending and do all this kind of stuff in the background, when really the crux of the negotiations has come down to who's going to get their taxes raised, and very little, if anything, is going to be done about spending. They have talked about the chained CPI has come up, which is basically a change in the calculation of the way the cost of living adjustments are counted. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was saying, once again, every time they make a change, we get screwed by a even more derivative version of what actual inflation is. And they only do it when they realize that, oh, shit, the people are about to figure out how screwed they are because of inflation. And I think we can tear into that CPI thing, because I think it's – I think part of the fiscal cliff cover-up is to get these things through. I think the major purpose behind the fiscal cliff tax is to raise the debt ceiling and to lower our personal revenues while increasing our personal expenses. It is not about increasing revenue to the government or decreasing expenses of government. It's about reducing our revenue and increasing our spending. And that's what this entire theater is about, to cover up the fact that you're the one who's getting screwed, and they're not doing anything about it. But I wanted to squeeze one thing you said. You said it's pinned the tail on the donkey. And actually, the way this is playing out, it's pinned the tail on the elephant. because we know that the media overwhelmingly favors the Democrats. But the fact is that the Republicans, especially since their leadership is not conservative, have no idea how to play this game, or they're complicit. So either they're idiots or they're Democrats. And either way, why are they in charge of this party? And why are they allegedly the voice of conservatism?
Well, you know, John Boehner strikes me as one of these people who's kind of a study in the Peter Principle and like a corporate go-along-to-get-along type person, where he sort of exists best in the background, doesn't raise his voice, doesn't cause a lot of waves, just goes along with what everybody else does. And then all of a sudden, in a day, he turns around and like, oh, well, we'll pick John Boehner because he doesn't create a lot of waves and nobody really totally dislikes him or hates him, and it'll be okay. And then he's Speaker of the House, which is one of the, right up there with the president, most powerful jobs in all of Washington, D.C., at least on paper, and then he doesn't know what to do. Or he does know what to do, and what he wants to do is completely the opposite of everything that the party stands for, and he's cleverly going along with the Democrats. But, you know, I think at a certain point, you just have to attribute it to incompetence, you know?
Yeah.
So I just think
Or he's complicit and incompetent. He could be both.
Yes, exactly. You know? He's complicit and he's incompetent. And, you know, look at what a wonderful job he's doing at it. Now we're confused. We can't tell. You know, that's what we were saying about the Romney campaign, which is that, you know, any sufficiently advanced incompetence is indistinguishable from malice, right? Like, I don't know. Yep. Is he doing it on purpose or is he just that terrible? It's hard to tell.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's competent at disguising his incompetence and his complicity. But either way, you know, this whole fiscal cliff thing, A, could have been avoided because it's illusory for the most part, and B, if Boehner had any substance, if he had any balls, if he had one-tenth of what Newt Gingrich had as Speaker of the House, he would have been able to message this thing appropriately and set communications at a proper level to actually illustrate to people what this thing is and actually make Obama and Reid own the damn thing. And, in fact, I'm pretty sure it's only Newt Gingrich, Senator Rand Paul, and retiring Congressman Ron Paul who basically said, let's fall off the cliff and let the Democrats own it. But now, because of the way the Republicans have handled it, led by John Boehner, when we fall off this cliff, if we do, which I still have my dubious suspicions that we are not going to fall off this cliff because they're going to give us, quote, a deal at the last minute. The Democrats
which
won't
will suck.
Because, yeah, of course, the deal is going to suck. The deal is to screw you. So just keep that in mind. Whatever the deal is, don't get excited. You're getting screwed. But the simple fact is that the way they've screwed it up so badly is that, when it happens, the Democrats won't own it. Obama and the Democrats and the mostly liberal media, including Fox News, have pretty much message this thing in such a way that there is just no chance that the Republicans are going to be able to recover from it. And again, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about what Newt Gingrich was talking about, how you handle things as Speaker of the House. And obviously, we all know that he did a great job as Speaker of the House. Now, some of us might disagree with some of his decisions. We might not like him. Whatever. Let's just look at the record. He moved Clinton to where Gingrich wanted him to be, not the other way around. And Newt, remember, he pointed out that there are like five tools as Speaker of the House, which, as Tex lucidly pointed out, is probably on par as far as power goes with the president because the Speaker controls the purse. And Newt said basically that you've got five strengths. You've got appropriations, oversight, legislation, and communication by all of the members to all of their constituents as opposed to just one Speaker. And then negotiation, which is the weakest of the five, and yet it is the only one that Boehner has used. He jumped right to negotiations with a guy that is more popular and better at messaging than Boehner is.
Because it's the most visible. It's the most visible, it's the most obvious. And so Boehner always goes for the most obvious ploy. Well, the obvious doesn't work in strategy, you know. But
that's
John Boehner for you. There he goes. That's our guy negotiating up the storm. And what are you getting out of it? Well, you're getting a crappy deal, if you get any deal at all. Because, you know, the Democrats, when you're negotiating, the strongest position is being the person who doesn't care if there's a deal or not. Now, whether or not the Democrats actually want a deal is irrelevant. They've postured as they're the people who don't care about a deal. Well, that's a stronger negotiating position than John Boehner's, which is we want a deal. Well, okay, maybe if you want a deal, the best thing to do is not to run around saying that you want a deal. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the essence of how Newt Gingrich brought Bill Clinton to heel, was he let the government get shut down. And by letting the government get shut down, he was making the argument that, you know, I don't care if there's a deal or not. You know, I'm standing up for this principle. I want to get these things out of this negotiation, and it's okay to me if the government shuts down because you are the president of the executive branch. And if the government shuts down, there isn't an executive branch. there's just you sitting in an office, and the executive's gone home, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a strong negotiating position. And guess what? You brought Bill Clinton to heel. You managed to get basically everything that you wanted out of the guy, and you balanced the budget. Okay, maybe you used some accounting tricks here and there to get it done, but it was the closest thing to a balanced budget you're ever going to see in your lifetime unless something changes dramatically here soon, and I'm just not seeing it right now. And what has John Boehner done? Well, he's let it known from day one that I want a deal and I'm willing to raise taxes. Okay, that's a great way to negotiate, dumbass. So now what is the negotiation about? It's about how John Boehner gets his deal to raise taxes, and it's not about any spending cuts or anything else because the guy doesn't know what he's doing.
Yep, and I mean basically, and we know this, Boehner set the tone right off the bat as to how he was going to handle these negotiations. He came at it from such a position of strength. It was such a bold statement. I mean, it was Reagan-esque. It was Gingrich-esque. He just came out there and he hit Obama right between the eyes with,
"Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led."
Bullseye. There you go. Yeah.
I mean, geez,
you know, Obama
was
like, "Oh my God. Well, how am I gonna deal with this now? I'm shaking in my boots."
It must have been frightened. I mean, goodness, he basically just handed him the entire chessboard and said, "Here's all the pieces and tell me what you want me to do." I mean, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, okay, but the Speaker of the House is the leader of the House. So you're the one who's supposed to lead. The president has a power. Yeah.
You should play the end of that speech where he took out that Hattori sword and just, like, ran himself through at the end of that speech.
Yeah, I remember that. That is the other part. And it usually with Boehner, I mean, it ends up sounding something like this. Because that's about the only skill that he's really got. And I got to say something. That, you know, maybe if you got a dirty diaper in the middle of the night, that might actually work on mommy to get your diaper changed. But I got to tell you that when you're negotiating with the President of the United States, that's a shitty strategy.
Well, you know, I mean, Newt Gingrich was faced with this exact same thing that happened to him in 96 when the Republican rhino du jour, Bob Dole, who was screwing Ronald Reagan, as we learned, on tax increases back during the early 80s, which are now being blamed on Ronald Reagan, not on the rhino Bob Dole who actually raised them. But Newt Gingrich saw his rhino lose, who actually was against Bob Dole, did not support Newt Gingrich and thought that Newt Gingrich was a bomb thrower, as most of the rhinos do. And when Clinton won, Newt Gingrich should not go out and give a speech saying, you know, "Mr. President, we're ready to be led." He said, you know, "The president's won a mandate, and we've also won a mandate in the House, and we're going to keep fighting for conservative principles." Booyah, what are you going to do? In your face, I'm Newt Gingrich, I'm here to say.
And
that's what you want. That's called leadership. But we don't have that in the Republican Party today.
No, we got this politically correct namby-pamby bullshit of, you know, reaching across the aisle and bipartisan, and we're all supposed to get along. It's like, no, I want you down in that pit, going at each other's throats, because that's the way things get done. When you're so cozy with the other side, I start to suspect that maybe you are the other side, and my suspicions are proving true on a consistent basis with these rhinos who constantly blame conservatives and Tea Party and Ron Paul Revolution for all the problems of why they lose races. But they will never look at themselves and say, no, it's because we've moved away from actual conservative principles and we're just about this party winning and about us getting our, you know, cushy positions. But it is not about the principles that the party allegedly represents. And that's where the fundamental problem is. You're not telling people the truth. People know you're duplicitous. And the fact is, look, the president does have power. He's got the bully pulpit, okay, and he's got the veto pen. So you pass something, he doesn't like it, he's going to veto it. But then he has to own that veto. So if you pass a proper budget, if you pass a good tax reform, if you pass true spending cuts, and he vetoes it, he owns that. You put that on him. Now, of course, you got to get that through the Senate, and because the Republicans were so intelligent as to run Willard Mitt Romney, they didn't win a majority in the Senate. Had they run a Ron Paul or a Newt Gingrich, I guarantee you the Republicans would control the Senate as well today. But they don't.
Which is ironic because Romney's biggest selling point when he first started running was everybody thought, well, he can't win the presidency, but he'll at least get us the Senate. He didn't do either.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't work out so good. You know? So the fact is, though, that if Boehner does his job, which he can do, and he sends it over to Reed, then Reed has to own it. And so these negotiations are about not having
to do Boehner's job now.
Well, you know what? Gingrich is allowed to do Boehner's job. Basically, on January 3rd, Republicans, if just 17 of them do not vote for John Boehner, he will not be Speaker of the House. Only 17 Republicans are required to make him lose the vote, because it is not a plurality vote. Okay, it isn't who gets the most votes. It has to be an absolute majority. And if 17 Republicans don't vote for John Boehner, either by abstaining or voting for somebody else, he won't be Speaker. Now, that usually freaks people out who are, quote, conservatives, because they're like, oh, my goodness, but then if 100% of the Democrats vote for Nancy Pelosi, he'll be the Speaker again. Wrong. If every single Democrat votes for Nancy Pelosi, she still would not have enough votes to be Speaker, even if she got more than Boehner did. Okay? So it would just be a simple fact that Boehner wouldn't get it. Then we would have a nice floor fight. And, of course, the Republicans will float Eric Cantor as the heir to the throne, because Republicans love the smooth transition of his turnism. You know, Dole loses.
He's the next in line. It's his turn. So why would we not go with somebody whose turn it is? Because he's been waiting
right
there for a long time, and it's his turn. So we should
vote
for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
And conservatives, they don't get a turn, because every time they rear their, you know, hoary head somewhere on a committee or something, John Boehner knocks them off of the committee, so they don't get in the line. See, only the rhinos are in the line. They're the only ones
that's
who
right
get the turns. Right? So you remember how in 2008 when Romney lost to McCain? Well, he actually lost to McCain again in 2012 because he got less votes. Well, it turns out, you know, at the very end he got a slight few more than John McCain, but of course the population of the United States increased over that period too, so I would argue he still lost to John McCain. But so then the next rhinos come in line and the conservatives never get a shot. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, screw those conservatives. They do crazy stuff. You know, like they actually want Washington to spend less money. They actually want Washington to have less power. They actually want the Constitution to be the reigning argument, not partisanship. So, you know, that's
kind of annoying. Well, they want the Republican Party not to be the quote, perceived party of, you know, old, rich, white men, and yet you have women show up like Sarah Palin. She has to be gotten rid of. You have, you know, black conservatives show up like Michael Steele or Alan West, and they have to be getting rid of because, you know, they're too conservative. You know, they say they want these things, and then when they show up and it turns out they're conservative because, you know, if you look at the label on the Republican Party, it says it's a conservative party, and so that tends to be the types of candidates that it attracts. And then when it has these types of candidates who not only believe this stuff and can articulate it well, but also are in the demographic that they claim to be wanting, they still get rid of them because the main criteria for the Republican leadership is that whoever these people are, they better not be conservatives.
Right.
Which ought to make you suspicious about the Republican Party. And they always talk about the Democrats are lying to the people. Okay, well, I think the Republican Party is lying to its voters because it claims to be conservative, and then it goes about systematically eliminating and destroying conservatives in its own party. And I tell you, it's not destroying the conservatives, but it's killing the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that thing, talk about fiscal cliffs, the Republican Party is teetering on a cliff right now, and that cliff is a cliff of support. Is it even worth saving this thing or finding some other place to be?
Right, and I think that that's going to be the big question carrying us over into 2013. Is the Republican Party worth saving, or do conservatives find another home? And, you know, don't think that that's going to be an answer that's going to make itself evident, you know, right away on January 1st. We probably won't even know the answer to that question by the next election, which is 2014. But that's the conversation we have to have, and I suggest that it's probably a good idea for us to try to promote conservatism within the Republican Party and everywhere else it can be promoted. I mean, what if we emerge with, you know, three or four or five conservative parties, right, who disagree on, you know, minor points but in general agree, then, hey, that's great. You know, if the Republican Party can maintain its brand of being the conservative party, then so be it. But it's going to be an uphill battle because I think the rhino cancer is so pervasive in the party that it's a cycle that's going to, you know, it's going to take much more than one election cycle to fix this thing if it can be done. But I think that the idea, and it goes back to true principles and messaging, is let conservatism rise, and let's really start to believe and act as conservatives first, Republicans second. I know a lot of the, quote, right-wing radio talking heads say this kind of stuff, but I don't know that they mean it, because Sean Hannity, who says that, is basically a Republican Party cheerleader and quite possibly a moron. But, real conservatism is about promoting the principles, not about promoting a candidate or candidates or a party. It's about getting the job done. And guess what, folks? We're getting really close to the point where if we don't get the job done, it's never going to get done. And you will go down a hole the way Rome did. And people will be writing about this years from now. So, sack up and let's get things done. The first thing, I'll throw it to you, Tex, in a minute. The first thing you got to do, hammer your congressman and at least five others and get all your friends to do the same thing. Get rid of John Boehner. And you have plenty of reasons for him gone. One, he's not a conservative. Two, he's ineffective at his job. Three, he's going to lose this deal even if there is a deal. Four, he cheated and he lied at the Tampa convention in order to ensure that the grassroots, the conservatives, the true Tea Party, the Ron Paul revolution have no voice in picking national candidates ever again. So on all those points, he's failed. He's got to go. The vote's January 3rd. And the new speaker does not have to be a current or former member of Congress. People don't know this, but there is no requirement. Now, it's never happened, and it's unprecedented, but it is possible to get a speaker, Newt Gingrich. I've heard also Michelle Bachmann say she's interested in challenging him. I got
this
some problems with her.
Disregard for the Constitution is also unprecedented. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And, I got some problems with Michelle Bachmann. I think she's, a politician, but, considerably better than John Boehner. I'll take her any day over him. At least she'll get some conservative things done, and I think she understands accounting considerably better than him. Tex, I'm going to throw it to you now, but we're already 30 minutes into a two-hour show. So, folks, we're going to open up the phones real soon. Call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And you can also join us in chat on Blog Talk Radio. And if you're listening to the show on the Internet, I would ask if you could go up to the show icon right below it. There's a button that says follow. If you click follow there, you will get notifications of our broadcast times in your Blog Talk Radio profile and its affiliated email. And please also find us on Facebook. That's the Tex and Rex Show on Facebook. Like our page, and we will send you notifications there about our broadcasts, and also any of the articles that we discuss or clips that we play will be posted there on that page. And please share that with your friends. So, Tex, I'll let you continue commenting on Boehner.
Yes, well, since it's 30 minutes into the show, I'd like to let you know that my hands have taken on a nice Smurf-like blue. And let you know that I was talking with some people over the holidays, and they were saying, well, our biggest problem is we've got, Obama in the White House, and he's this big socialist, and he's doing this, and, I think every action that he takes, he's trying to harm the country and all this kind of stuff. And, I went back to the fact, or he's just an idiot and actually believes in Keynesianism and thinks he's helping but is hurting, but it doesn't really matter. The point is that all of this is hurting. So the problem isn't necessarily Obama. The problem is our own team has leadership, and it has one of the most powerful positions, but it does the opposite of what it claims to be campaigning for and standing for. And, this is something that we can actually do something about. Barack Obama is the president. There's nothing you can do about that, right? But you can affect the leadership of your own party and the people who are speaking on behalf of our side, or the people who claim to be on our side but seem to act in, direct contravention of what they claim to stand for. That's the real problem, is that you don't have an opposition. Sure. They always talk about the loyal opposition and everything. Well, I'd just be happy with any kind of opposition at this point, because everyone's just going along with all this government spending and not doing anything about it, and just the erosion of the Constitution left and right. It's really maddening. And at what point, how many people out there in the country think that this is a good idea or that these are good fiscal policies. I mean, even people in Congress, even John Boehner has to know this is a bad way to be running the country. So the question is, why does he go along with it? What is it? He just doesn't know how to fix it. He's afraid to stand up. I mean, you're going to have a press conference and you're going to say something actually meaningful that people will remember for years. You take a stand in life, you know. What you do now echoes in eternity. Well, not in John Boehner's. Well, I certainly don't want to stand up and say anything that might be controversial. I'd like to sit down and just go along to get along, even though I know that it's terrible. So what does that tell you about that type of person? Here's someone who rose to the position of leadership, and yet they're a conflict avoider and they're afraid of saying anything, but yet they're aware that it's problematic. Well, that type of person has to go, or they're complicit in it. And if they are, either way, they got to go. You know,
yep,
and this
I
kind
agree.
Of goes on down the board, you know, and Reince Priebus and all these other people who are in these leadership positions, they're either all complicit in this thing, or they're all on the take, as the consultants were during the campaign. You know, they're just mm-hmm. making money and telling the Romney campaign whatever they want to hear. It doesn't matter as long as the money keeps coming. Yeah, Mitch, you're going to win. It's so great. I mean, Romney thought he had it so in the bag, he didn't really even campaign the last 4 days. I mean, let's face it, he was barely campaigning during the election. But, you know, he didn't really even campaign, and then he was shocked that he didn't win. Well, you could look during those primaries. I was completely, I was like, yeah, see, we told you. I mean, you could just look during the primaries. Wherever Mitt Romney was winning, voter turnout was down. This is what Newt Gingrich was saying, is that Mitt Romney suppresses the vote. People do not turn out to vote for this guy. But yet,
and not just
somehow,
Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
All rhinos.
Yeah, all rhinos. I mean, it's just endemic. People are not enthusiastic about these types of candidates. They don't want to see it because there is a party out there that represents that. It's called the Democrat Party. And if you wanted to, you know, be a Democrat, go be a Democrat. At least they have a party and a base of support that would vote for you for doing these things. But if you're going to stand and claim you believe one thing and then do another, and in Mitt Romney's case have an entire record of doing absolutely the opposite of everything you claim to believe this time, people just aren't going to believe you, and they're not going to show up. And you also screwed them over with McCain in 2008, and so people were just tired of the rhinos. And then, you know, you had Bush come in, who was supposed to be a conservative, and then he has big government conservatism, where he blew the budget up, you know, basically undid everything that Reagan and Gingrich had been doing for the past 20 years. But yet you went along with it because it was your team, and you rooted for him because the opposition was so bad. You know, you certainly don't want to turn over to the Democrats. And then it turns out, well, the Republicans essentially now are the Democrats, you know, just Democrats light or Democrats with different iconography, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Kills the brand.
Yep. It's very true. And unfortunately, having to talk about politics and marketing terms like brand is a sad commentary on the state of affairs in our country, but it is the reality. And you know what? If you're a realist, you deal with the world as it is, not as you wish it would be. It would be much better if people were politically astute and politically aware, but no, it's all about marketing. But yeah, these guys are tainting the brand. And I would argue that the election on January 3rd for Speaker of the House is far more important than the election we had on November 6th of this year. That's crazy, Rex, because we don't get to vote on that one. Sure you do. Put pressure on your congressman. It's more important, I'll tell you why. Because as we said for a long, long time, even if Romney had won, nothing would change. The Republican Party would merely be the victor, but conservatism would not be advanced one iota. In fact, it would be set further back. So this election, getting rid of Boehner, is more important. Because, one, you can't replace him with a Democrat. That's just not going to happen. But you can replace him with a real conservative or considerably more conservative Republican than him or Eric Cantor or Paul Ryan or Joe McCarthy. No, not Joe McCarthy. What's his name? Kevin McCarthy. Or one of those other rhino losers at the top that are in leadership right now. I think that it is very important to do that. Go ahead.
If Romney had won, they would be selling, you know, whatever John Boehner is trying to sell right now as a deal with Obama, they would be selling essentially the same thing, but it would be approved by Romney rhetorically, saying, "Oh, I think this is great. And when I come in, we're going to have to look at, you know, raising taxes. We're going to have to look at, you know, reducing deductions, same thing as raising taxes, and all this kind of stuff. But it would be done under the Republican Party's name, and so under a Republican Party veneer, and everyone would be accepting it. And Democrats, oh, this is a catastrophe. We cannot go along with this. And then meanwhile, the news media would be saying that, you know, oh, the new centrist Republican Party and the end of the Tea Party and the end of conservatism and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, your obituary would be written. So even though this is bad and it certainly isn't the way that you want to go, politically it's better for us because, you know, it shows that the party cannot succeed on the rhino path that it's on. And this process of going through and eliminating conservatives wherever you find them is incredibly self-destructive, and removing those four members of the House from their committee positions for opposing Boehner's deal is just a recipe for disaster.
Well,
and as Gingrich said, it's basic. He said you don't want to go down that path because you're going to cause a civil war in the party, and that's the last thing that you want.
Right.
Or,
well, apparently he
doesn't
want that. Yeah, maybe they want that. Maybe because they think that they can win it. Guess what? Maybe they can win it in the party, but if they do win the, quote, civil war in the Republican Party, there is no Republican Party. And as we've talked about before, and Chris Shipler on Coalition of Freedom Facebook has brought up so many times, the Republican Party has been bleeding out support and membership for a long time. If they win, the rhinos win this civil war, that membership will go to such anemic levels that the party won't survive. And frankly, if they want to win this thing and we can't defeat them, to hell with the Republican Party. But I still think that they can be defeated because overwhelmingly the people are not rhinos. The people don't sympathize with rhinos because if you're that much of a socialist crazy nutcase, you're a Democrat. And if you're not a socialist crazy Democrat, then you're generally a conservative Republican. You are not a rhino unless you're elected to office. And, you know, here's the other thing to keep in mind, folks. You know, we're talking about, you know, is he incompetent? Is he this? Is he that? Just understand something. These people that are elected to politics, they're not smarter than you. They're not more capable than you. They don't understand things better than you. They only know how to win by using the consultants and the machine and raising money to get their positions. But they don't know squat. And the simple fact is, I would argue that the average American sitting around their kitchen table trying to pay their bills and balance their budget knows more about economics than most of these jerks on Capitol Hill. And I would argue that most politically active, quote, conservatives or Tea Party people know more about the Constitution than these guys do. And yet these guys next week are going to take an oath, as Obama will on January 20th, to uphold and defend the Constitution of these United States for these United States from enemies foreign and domestic. They're taking an oath, and they don't even know what the thing is. But, Tex, before we open up the lines, let's take a 3.25-minute break and listen to Dr. Ron Paul, retiring congressman, talk about the fiscal cliff. That way maybe you can unblue your hands a little bit. And then we'll come back on the other side of this. How's that sound?
Excellent. That sounds great.
Fantastic. All right, here's Ron Paul being interviewed by somebody about the fiscal cliff.
For more on the situation, let's now bring in outgoing Republican Representative Ron Paul. Congressman Paul, welcome back to the show. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
In the past, Congressman, you have indicated that you would be willing, and perhaps the best-case scenario is for America to go over the cliff. Is it playing out exactly as you think it should?
Well, no, I don't think anybody wants anything to go over the cliff. My statement has been that I think we have passed that point of no return where we can actually get our house in order, because I believe that there's too much bipartisanship on the spending. Nobody's talking about cutting any spending. And in the midst of this crisis of a major deficit and a national debt increase coming up, nobody wants to talk about military cuts. You think they're not going to give the farmers their due, because now the milk will be doubled in price if they do that, so the farm bill will get passed. The safety net is always available to rich and poor. Republicans and Democrats all support this. Now there's been a recent hurricane. There will be no hesitation whatsoever to spend that money without offsetting it. So the Republicans and Democrats, they pretend they're fighting up there, but they really aren't. They're arguing over power and spin and who looks good and who looks bad, but they're all trying to preserve this system where they can spend what they want, take care of their friends, and let the Fed print the money when they need it. But the markets are saying, and it'll get a lot worse, I think they're saying, there's a limit to this, and we're reaching it, and there is not going to be a political solution here in the next 20 days or 30 days or even 6 months. Whatever they do here between now and the beginning of the year will just be fluff, and it will not solve our problems.
Ron, thank you for joining us. It's Amelia Bordeaux. I have a quick question for you. If no deal is reached by year end and we do go off that fiscal cliff, what is the point for Democrats and Republicans, meaning who has more leverage now that we've gone over the fiscal cliff in their bargaining power? Who does it benefit? Which party does that benefit the most?
Well, it's the people who have control of the spin, and that's the Democrats. The Republicans, even with all their shortcomings, have actually passed bills that would have solved this problem. But the spin that is accomplished by the Senate and by the President and by the media, it makes it look like Republicans don't care or didn't do anything. So I think the whole country is will lose. The country loses, but I don't think anybody has any benefit. But I think they'll come up with something. It's sort of like, how many times have they had a solution for the Greece crisis? You know, about 10 or 15 times, and then the market responds favorably, and then they find out, well, they really didn't solve it. There's no admission that they have a crisis. They have no admission that the country's bankrupt. There's no admission that our government is spending way too much, and it's way beyond our means, and there's not a single bit of effort to cut anything. Even when they talk about slashing the budget and these cuts, they're only talking about tinkering on the edges of proposed automatic increases. So they're so far removed from admitting the seriousness of this crisis, and if they don't admit it, they can't solve the problem.
Right.
They're like a bunch of drug addicts that just want another fix, and that's what they're looking for.
Congressman, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Congressman Ron Paul of Texas.
I find that to be a very lucid analysis, and the interesting thing is he talked about it, what they're doing is just fluff. We called it political theater, whatever. The question you have to ask yourself is if we go off this fiscal cliff, and again, I have my doubts that we're going off this fiscal cliff, they're going to put together a deal at the last minute, and just to understand something, the deal is that they will all play politics, and you, Mr. and Mrs. America, will be screwed. But the question is, when they fall off this fiscal cliff, who's likely to do the belly flop and who's likely to do the, you know, triple gainer and a nice dive into the water? Well, you know, let's face it. It's going to be Obama who's going to look good and Boehner's going to flop on his belly because that's what he's been doing. And that doesn't mean that Obama is some kind of a genius or that he's more competent than Boehner. It's just that he's got a more effective machine. But the fact is that it's all just fluff.
Boehner's had this job for 2 years. So what do you think? He's finally going to grow into the job and change? I mean, Speaker of the House is something that you earn through time and working in Congress and having a record of accomplishment and doing things. And then you get to the office and you know what to do. Boehner doesn't know what to do, and he's not about to be able to figure out what to do, and he doesn't want to do anything even if he did know how to do something. So he's the wrong guy to lead. But, you know, if you want to talk about triple gainers and that kind of thing, one of the guys who may be, about to make a triple gainer here is Ron Paul himself, because word on the street is there's a draft Ron Paul for governor of Texas, and that certainly would be wonderful for me down here. So Ron Paul, 2014 for me, for governor. So that would be great.
Excellent. Giddy up. Let's make it happen. I mean, look, I like we said before, Obi-Ron Kenobi is going to be more powerful now that they've, quote, struck him down than they can ever imagine. And I think he'll be a far more effective voice outside of the Imperial City and actually sitting in the governor's mansion in Texas would be a pretty powerful place for him to have a very strong voice from. So that's encouraging, and I hope you keep us posted on that.
Texas, not an inconsequential state. So
yeah,
if he can bring the message here and start enacting the Ron Paul vision here in the state of Texas, 50 experiments of democracy, and the good experiments get taken up by the nation as a whole. That was the original model. I mean, I think it makes a great case. And it's a great way for him to continue to lead the liberty movement in a positive direction and hopefully provide a model for the country, the rest of the country to follow, and hopefully the federal government as well.
Yep, I would agree with that 100%. And I think that we're seeing a strong movement for, even though some of it is, quote, secessionist, which I think is a little foolhardy, but still it's principled, secessionist, nullification, state sovereignty. So I think that having the position as a governor is pretty powerful, especially considering that I think, 30 governors currently are Republican governors. Now, one could argue how Republican some of them are, but nevertheless, that's a pretty powerful indictment of, quote, the party that's leading on this fiscal cliff. All right? Out of 50 governorships, 30 of them belong to your opposition party. That tells you that the people outside of the Imperial City and the Capital Beltway zone are completely not in line with what's going on inside the Imperial City. So there's obviously a disconnect there, and that disconnect needs to be severely disconnected. We're about to open up the lines, so if you want to call in and chat about John Boehner, the fiscal cliff, and the final countdown for 2012, the call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And to keep in mind, when we talk about final countdown, it's not this final countdown to the fiscal cliff, because that's just illusory. But it is the final countdown for 2012, which was a very interesting year. And I can tell you that at the beginning of this year, if anybody had asked me if I'd be talking to you on this radio show, I would have told them that they were nuts. And I would have also told you that next president of the United States is going to be Newt Gingrich. Things didn't work out that way. And we all know why, and we can talk about that as well if you'd like to chime in on what happened in Tampa and, the primaries and how the rhinos have really, really put the screws to the grassroots. We can address that as well. But I will play a little clip, and then we'll have a little monologue by text, and then we'll open up the line. 646-649-1013. We are talking about the end of 2012. This is our last show this year. We'll be back in January. All right, it's to you, Tex, and then we'll open up the lines.
Sure. Well, one thing I think we need to focus on is that it's a rebuilding year for the GOP, and so over the course of the next year, not much is going to get done in Washington because the Republicans have the House and the Democrats the Senate, so that kind of keeps a lot of things from coming out of Congress. And if you have really weak leadership, you're not able to go to the media, as Gingrich did back in the mid-90s, and make the case directly to the American people. Newt Gingrich had a great program back then. He was always on TV. You always saw him. He was always doing interviews and talking about the agenda. And when he wasn't able to do it, he had his lieutenants out there doing it. And if he didn't have his lieutenants out there doing it, or if people weren't watching that particular channel, all the local House members were talking to their local TV stations, were talking to their local radio stations, and being ambassadors for the conservative message. And that action is why the Republicans are even able to have a majority in the House of Representatives today, because back then the Republicans didn't believe that they could ever be in a majority. They just thought it was nonsense, and Gingrich was a fantasist. But they owe their position today to the work that Gingrich did, and that they ridiculed at the same time. But we're going into a rebuilding year, and I think it's time for the 113th Congress, when it comes together in January, to start staking out what is it that Republican leadership would do for the country, and how would that be vastly different from what the Democrat Party is proposing. What is their vision? How are they going to go about achieving it with specific detail? Too many people in Washington think that the American people are dumb, or they just want to hear a lot of happy platitudes, and they don't want to hear the details. People want to hear the actual details. And when Gingrich was talking about the details, people were very involved in the details and very knowledgeable about it. I mentioned the thing about having bills in committee, and a certain number of members had to sign off on that bill for it to come out of committee for a vote. And the people who had signed off on the bill was kept secret in a drawer somewhere in the committee chairman's desk. But members of the House would go out and they would complain that, I want this great bill to come out of committee because I want to vote for it. This would actually help us. Well, the thing was, they hadn't signed off on it, but since it was secret, nobody knew. And Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh they were out there advocating for this to become public, who had signed and who hadn't signed. And that is a very minute, wonkish thing for people even to know about. But because they kept talking about it, conservatives got animated and they went and they did something about it. So what I'm saying is, with a good media campaign of representatives and members of the Republican leadership going out and appealing directly to the people will be knowledgeable and they will know what to do to how to fix things. You know, we're out here, we're the supporters, we're willing to do stuff, and Boehner's just not asking for anything. He's negotiating everything in secret. He's not keeping us informed as to what's going on. I mean, Eric Cantor, is he out there telling you anything? Do you feel informed when you hear what Cantor's saying? No. It's just a bunch of platitudes. Where are the lieutenants out there educating you as to what's going on in these negotiations and how, what is the vision for how this deal will fix things? There is no vision. There's just, oh, well, we don't want it to go. You said millionaires and people making $250,000 is not a millionaire. And so I'll raise it on people making $400,000. Well, that's also not a millionaire, you idiot. You know? So
that's 40% of a millionaire if you're doing the math at home.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're criticizing Obama for saying millionaires and doing $250,000, and you're saying, well, but I'd sell out at $40,000 or $400,000. Well, you know, it completely undermines and tramples all over your message, and then people are confused and demoralized. So what the 113th Congress needs to do is come into power and stake out what is it that they want to do, whether they're able to achieve it or not, prove that they're willing to go vocalize it and drum up popular support for it so that you can play that into a victory into 2014, as we did in 2010 with the dreaded, horrid Tea Party that actually was the last best hope for, you know, the Congress to ever come to its senses. We can do that again, and with successes there or even defeats after 2014 in Congress, use those defeats to show that, look, this is the people who are opposing this vision. If we had the Senate or if we had, you know, the presidency, we would be able to accomplish this vision, and the people would rally around it and they would go on to victory. We've done this before. This happened after the Goldwater defeat. It happened after Nixon. You know, we all rallied together and we were able to win these stunning upset victories when, you know, people had written the Republican Party off. But
exactly.
If you don't have leadership and if you don't have local people out there who are passionate and actually believe this stuff, and you have this milquetoast leadership that just doesn't want to lead, then just close up the party because it's over. There's not a point. I mean, I don't want to hear this kind of news. You know, it's boring.
It's not news. It's not boring. It's not informative. It's not even infotainment. At least the Democrats have infotainment. This isn't even entertaining. And what you pointed out about, you know, okay, we don't like that we're doing millionaires because you're $250,000 is a millionaire, but $400,000, that's acceptable. I mean, you're basically saying, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but they're whores. They're just negotiating on the price. Who are we going to sell out? At what level? $400,000, $500,000, a million? Yeah, I know. I was being polite. But, look, the simple fact is when Gingrich was, quote, negotiating with Clinton, Gingrich was out there every other day, if not every day, speaking to us, telling us what's going on, what his vision is, what the Clinton problems were. And, of course, not. He didn't discuss the details of the negotiations because that would be untenable, but he did keep us informed. And then he went back and informed his caucus, who some of them, like, oh, I don't know, John Boehner, little Ricky Santorum, and light in his loafers Lindsey Graham, found him to be erratic and zany, and he would keep changing things. Right, because he'd forced Clinton into a corner, and now they were negotiating about how to get things done. And he got it done. So, you know, the simple fact is that you need somebody who knows how to lead. Gingrich knows how to lead. You need somebody who knows how to lead. Ron Paul knows how to lead. Oh, but Ron Paul was ineffective in Congress. Well, that's why I prefer Gingrich, but let's keep in mind, Ron Paul may not have, quote, led in Congress, and that's because, you know, the Republicans would never have him as Speaker of the House or put him in a leadership position. They put him on a couple of committees, but, you know, he wasn't given the voice he needed, and there wasn't enough Ron Paul support in Congress to make that change. But Ron Paul led you to what the future of the GOP can be if you truly want to be a conservatarian party. Which is truly the only times that you win, okay? Ron Paul showed you how to do it. So all this talk about we're not appealing to women, we're not appealing to Mexicans, we're not appealing to minorities, it's all crap because Ron Paul does, and he showed you how to do it on principle.
Well, we're appealing to them when we keep sending them up there and you keep shutting them out. taking them off committees and closing down their districts or redistricting them whenever you can. That's the problem. It's not that they're not in the party or interested in it. It's that you don't want them there because, oh, crap, it's another conservative, regardless of, you know, their race, gender, or, you know, income level.
Yeah.
You know, oh, my God, shut up. It's a conservative. Get them the hell out of here. But two of the things that, one of the things that both Gingrich and Ron Paul are very effective at doing are inspiring, leading movements of people who are inspired to do political things to achieve a vision for the betterment of the country. And the Republican Party has shown over time that they hate that, and they don't want that in the party. What they want are people who will be compliant and who will sit back and shut up and let them run Jeb Bush or, you know, their next
Marco
Rhino
Rubio.
Du jour. Yeah.
Right.
Bob Dole, Mitt Romney, John McCain, whoever their Rhino is, and just applaud, you know, like the end of Now I forget the Shakespeare play. Was it the end of Midsummer Night's Dream or The Tempest, where they had the applause that sent the ship off, off the stage? Yeah, it was The Tempest. That's right. So, you know, and just applause to send their ship off up to Congress. That's all they want is your applause. Mm-hmm. But they certainly don't want your participation or you to have anything to say about where the ship goes or what it does, because they're all knowing and they're all seeing, and you're just the dumb, stupid, you know, unwashed masses out there, and, you know, shut the hell up. You're embarrassing us when we're in Washington because we think you're a bunch of podunk redneck knuckleheads who embarrass us at our fancy parties in Washington. You know, sort of the...
I have not begun to embarrass you at your fancy parties in Washington.
That's right. Our voters are not to be seen nor heard, really, is the attitude, I think, of the most of the GOP establishment. We don't want to see
you, we
don't want to hear from you, we just want your support.
And if they manage to get somebody in there, we'll just remove them from their committee positions. Or like Alan West, who, if I'm not mistaken, is not an old white guy, we'll just redistrict you so that you can't win. So, you know, the worst enemy of conservatism and the worst enemy of the Republican Party are these rhinos, these Republicans
only. I got to deal with a canard here. So I was talking to someone, and they said, well, you know, that's not true. The RNC and John Boehner and all those people, they can't go redistrict, you know, Alan West out of the Congress. It's the legislature of Florida that decides that. Who do you think's running that, you know? And also, Florida probably has things that they want in their districts or done in their state. Hold on, I have a... Sorry, it's cold.
God bless you.
You know, I was fumbling for that mute button, man, and, you know, these cold fingers, they just aren't moving. You know, they have things that they want done in front of Congress, and we already know that Boehner told Priebus not to help Michelle Bachmann in her reelection bid because he didn't want to see her back in Congress, right?
Yep.
Do you think he might have picked up the phone and said the same thing about Alan West District? Get rid of this guy. He's out here causing problems for me. He said crap sandwich with a smile about my rhino.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. And you know what? Because he did that, it would be a beautiful irony if the Republicans were smart enough to make Michelle Bachmann the Speaker of the House as opposed to John Boehner. That would be fantastic. And there's a lot of power behind that because, number one, Michelle Bachmann does have some Tea Party cred. I mean, she's got some problems, but she's relatively conservative. And number two, you know, the party that it doesn't appeal to women just made the Speaker of the House the second woman in history to be Speaker of the House. That would be pretty powerful.
And of course, the media will try to Sarah Palinize her because they hate conservative women because it undermines their whole message that the Republican Party is the party of white males, which really I think is what the Republican rhino, perhaps faux, you know, wolf in sheep's clothing leadership tries to perpetuate, is that image. I think because they get rid of people who don't fit that image. But, you know, the media will try to Sarah Palinize her present her as some kind of ingenue who doesn't know enough about Washington and that kind of thing. And, hey, you just point to Nancy Pelosi and what a knucklehead she is, you know.
Yep,
so,
exactly.
I think Michelle Bachmann would be a great choice. She'd be a great Speaker of the House. It also would send a powerful message, I think, about the status of women within the Republican Party. And although I don't, you know, try to ascribe to race and gender politics because, for me, it's really about the principles, and your race and gender are your own business, and none of us have anything to do with that. You just have to be born with those attributes. But I think it would send a powerful message, and look, she's bound to, just even if you look at standard deviation, she's bound to be better than John Boehner.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, she's got a lot recommending her, too. So
Exactly. I agree. I agree with that assessment. Again, I'm not a huge fan of hers, but I certainly think that she's significantly better than Boehner. And the simple fact is, you know, the one I would like to see as speaker would be, you know, Newt Gingrich. But, you know, Michelle Bachmann will do. But the thing is that Newt pointed out the challenge that the Republican Party faces. And he wrote this long memo that I know Robert Jetter and Chris have chatted about on their shows. And we tried last week, Tex, in your absence. It never happened. And we're already 1 hour in and about to open up the phone. So I don't know if we'll get to it today. But he did point out that there will be a lot of challenges for the party coming up. And it will take, you know, time to put these things forward. But he said that they are very powerful, well-connected, and prestigious forces who have made a lot of money out of the old system and have a huge interest in keeping it intact. These are the RINOs and their consultants. It may be bad for the GOP, but it is good for them. There are a number of influential people who are simply uncomfortable trying to think through fundamental change. They like to raise money and spend money. Over the last 6 presidential elections, they have been in the minority 5 times. If money were the answer by now, they would have found a majority. RINOs always lose. The only RINO you were able to be successful with was George Bush, and most people did not perceive him as a RINO, especially in 1999 and 2000. The committee, which is the Committee on the Growth and Opportunity Project, has a historic obligation to insist on very deep, thorough analysis of where we are, what we did, the challenges we face, and the strategies and structures needed to win in the future. If basic rethinking doesn't make a lot of people very uncomfortable, it isn't serious enough, thorough enough, or bold enough. This makes the Growth and Opportunity Project a central activity for the party in the next 6 to 9 months. What Newt Gingrich is talking about here is ousting the consultants, ousting the fundraising model, and ousting the RINO-entrenched, you know, business-as-usual cocktail party crowd, and really going heavy grassroots and reaching people in their neighborhoods long before an election to get them to become conservative Republican voters, which most of them already are. They just hate this party because of losers like John Boehner and Little Prince Pubic and John Sununu and Eric Cantor and all these other useless guys. So if you got any comments, Tex, we'll go to you. Otherwise, I'm going to open up the phones.
Let's go ahead and open up the phones.
All right. First caller is from 212, which I believe is New York. 212, you're live with Tex and Rex. What's on your mind as we approach the final countdown? If you don't want to chat, that's quite all right. I'll remute you, and you can just keep on listening, but we appreciate you being here. All right, Chris,
Chris, so let's go ahead.
Chris, you're live.
No, go ahead.
Rex. Chris,
hey,
doing great, and you know, you're calling in as our guest. What's it like being a host on a radio show? I guess you got your first taste of that this week.
Yeah, kind of fun. Still getting things set up. I was trying to upload some video clips and music and stuff like that, and the thing was dogging on me, and I finally got that done today. So I'm getting more comfortable with the application. I've got a lot of things I want to cover. You know, and I'll
There's
fit right in between. You know, I'll fit right in between what you guys are doing and Robert's show, and you know, see if we can fill this thing
like
for a nice week.
It's like a duck moving across the surface of the water, you know. But
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff going on underneath the water to make it all work. So it's not easy.
Yeah, no. Blog Talk Radio is often quite uncooperative.
Yeah, it has its glitches, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying real hard to get a good video clip, you know, to start the show, and it just kept spinning and spinning and spinning on me. And today I set up another show and uploaded it, and it was done like in a minute, you know. And I'm like going, well, why didn't it work last night when I wanted to play the damn clip, you know? So, but we filled it in anyway.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
So I know that
I listened for a little while, and I got to tell you, it was a great show, and I was so tired I nodded off and fell asleep in my easy chair, but I thought you guys were doing great, and I was going to dial in and give you some support there, but I definitely will do that in the future.
Yeah, no, you guys are always welcome to come on. Kelly actually came on towards the end, and then him and I went, you know, into that overtime. My son left, and then we just talked about a lot of different things and, you know, how that happens. But, you know, I think that, you know, this whole gun control issue and the shooting that led to this political game, you know, I didn't want to get involved in it. I didn't even really want to watch the news of the day because I knew they'd lie and blow it out of proportion and do their usual thing. But I knew that this one, they were going to use to run. They were going to run with this one, and so I got involved in it. And so we're doing a whole series on it, and hopefully, you know, we accomplish something because it seems like people are confused. You know.
Yeah. Well, from what I've been, you know, talking to people, reading, understanding is that, to a large extent, the message that the Democrats or the left is trying to send with, you know, their gun control message as a result of this is largely backfired because, you know, the NRA said, hey, we ought to have, you know, armed guards at schools or whatever to protect the kids and everything. And then, you know, E.J. Dionne and a bunch of other people said, oh, that's the stupidest idea that I've ever heard and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. And then it turns out that, you know, there were prominent Democrats who were calling for exactly this type of action, you know, earlier, but just because it's a Republican, oh, yeah, Clinton was calling for this. And, you know, just because it's a Republican, this gets back to the problem of the two-party system and what the Founding Fathers said, which is that factions or political parties are not only a bad idea, but they are inherently evil because they don't care about the good of the country. They only care about relative gain and who's going to get credit for doing the thing. So even though they may think that this is a good idea, they think that it would be bad for their party if the other party were seen as being the party that accomplished this, so they're going to go against it. So that these things perpetuate in order that one team can win on the issue rather than that the nation itself can function properly, and that really is a problem. But the message, some people have been able to turn on its head and said, okay, well, you know, if gun-free zones are so great, right, and they create this big realm of safety, then why don't we just turn the White House into a gun-free zone? You know, Secret Service can't carry guns.
Yeah, that's actually one of those petitions they're doing. Did you know that?
I saw that. I thought that was a stroke of genius. I actually think that came out of Alex Jones, which is down here with me, out of Austin, Texas. So I thought that was really clever.
Well, did you hear that Michael Moore's, you know, he's really anti-gun, even did a movie and all this crap, and he's such an anti-gun.
He's not anti-gun. He carries a gun.
His bodyguard got arrested in New York because he wasn't properly licensed to carry in New York.
Not surprising. Look, I remember something, okay? The ultimate hypocrisy. The ultimate hypocrisy.
Is a liberal?
I was going to lead to liberal, but you can't just label it liberal because in the use of the word today liberal, you pretty much mean those on the left and the Democrats. But I would argue that any statist, collectivist, elitist snob is a hypocrite. And that includes all those limousine liberals that are basically the largest racists on the planet that run around accusing people who have, you know, the Confederate battle flag as being dumb redneck racists. And, you know, we do all these things to promote and help minorities and blacks and women, when in fact they're the ones that oppress them more than anybody else. But it's also rhinos. They're the biggest hypocrites because they run around speaking to the guns crowd and the Confederate battle flag crowd and the Gitterdun crowd, you know, the regular blue-collar conservative Americans in flyover country. But these guys are just as elite, just as snobby, and just as statist and corporatist as the Democrats. So that's why they keep losing. Because at least with the Democrats, they've got 40 years of selling this bullshit to their constituency. The Republicans don't because we're still conservatives. And you can't sell us this stuff. I mean, we might believe you the first, the second, the third time, but after a while, it's like, hey, there's a pattern here. It's not like an anomaly that's a rhino. It seems that the anomalies in the Republican Party are conservatives, libertarians, and conservatarians. That's the anomaly. And it has to stop being the anomaly because the voting base is exactly there. We're not rhinos.
Well, and one of the advantages that the Democrat Party has is they have the advantage that they can be absolutely craven, and it doesn't matter because they don't claim to believe in anything except government, that the government is the solution to all your problems, and anything that stands in the way of government and government coming to your aid or your rescue or your eventual, you know, serfdom and slavery at the hands of the state has to be gotten out of the way. So there's no problem that government cannot solve. As Gingrich said, you know, Democrats wake up every morning, they know government is the answer, they just don't know what the question is that day.
That's true. Yeah.
And the problem that Republicans have is we stand up for these principles, and our leadership, the voter stands up for these and says, this is what I believe, and this is what I go and I vote for, and then we vote for leaders who sell us out. That's a harder sell.
Well, because they lie. Because they lie. They lie. They tell you, they look, I mean, and when I say they lie, I'm not saying that their personal convictions may not be accurate, but, you know, for example, I've heard John Boehner make some pretty powerful, impassioned pro-life speeches, okay? And wherever you feel about the issue, okay, let's not discuss that, but very simply put, as a conservative Republican in this country, you don't win races unless you carry the pro-life and the Christian vote. It just doesn't happen. That's your constituency, and if you don't carry them, you're not going to win. So from a pragmatic matter, you're going to lose. And he's given some pretty powerful speeches, yet he, in fact the whole party for the most part, hasn't done squat on the issue. Now, I don't know what his personal feelings are. I would hope that he genuinely believes these things. But when it comes to the politics, again, he's either incompetent or duplicitous. Either way, that's you cannot carry favor with your constituency if you're lying to them this way, whether it's because you can't do the job that they put you in to do or you don't want to do that job. You want to do a different job using that office. And if you consistently do that, you will alienate your voters. Go ahead, Trog.
No, that's I just had this thing flowing through my mind because you guys know I'm really doing this in-depth gun control, the assault weapon ban, and following that whole, you know, doing my usual research where I'm digging in, and that leads you down that rabbit hole. And it's amazing how many so-called Republicans were part of all of that crap. And it's kind of frustrating to continually, you know, going back because I was not as political as you guys are. You know, I couldn't care less about federal politics. I lived in Alaska. We were our own country, you know. And so I'm kind of new to the scopes, you know, new to this game. So as I do research on, you know, picking any topic, whether it's abortion or it's the fiscal issues, the Fed, debt ceiling increase, abuse of the Constitution. You know, it's taken me down, you know, a lot. Most of my research has been in my own party. And it's very frustrating, especially when I got into all the programs that Nixon passed. And then I'm doing gun research, and I'm finding that at the end of Reagan's career, he started moving over towards gun control. And I'm like going, what the hell is wrong with these people? So, you know, so the revelation of all of a sudden going, oh, my God, I thought these people believed in the same things I did. And come to find out, not many of them did. And they've been playing games with Democrats in the abuse of the Constitution and our economic system for a long freaking time. And I think that the Tea Party was probably in the Paul Libertarian movement. The Paul Liberty movement. I'm going to say Libertarian, sorry. But you know, those two movements probably represent us better than anything we've seen. And, you know, before that, you know, probably Gingrich. And actually, you know, Gingrich had some big government mistakes of his own from my perspective. And maybe I'm too much, you know, more towards the libertarian, being, you know, half my life in Oregon, Washington, Alaska. Of course, Oregon, Washington are blue now, but they weren't when I was growing up. So I think the frustration is going, well, damn it, both parties, and it's been both parties for a long time. That's the frustration.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is what the British mean when they talk about the ruling class, right? Well, the ruling class is in Washington. They're doing very well. If you look at the wealthiest counties in the United States, 6 of the top 10 are outside Washington, D.C. Wonder how that could be.
Disgusting.
And they are in large agreement as to the direction that they're taking the country. And as long as the Federal Reserve, which is the old money trust, the only trust that not only didn't get busted, but actually grew and managed to basically shrink the government down to do its bidding. You know, they always talked about there's a famous political cartoon with John D. Rockefeller holding up Congress in the sand with a monocle, looking in on it, saying, you know, what a funny little government. Well, John D. Rockefeller was not able to control government anywhere near the way that the money trust has been able to do so. And the ruling class really is, they're all in line with this, and that's the problem. But they have to go get your vote, and so they have to do this political posturing stuff. And the more vociferous the rhetoric, to a large extent, the lower the stakes. You know, that's what somebody said, the yelling is so loud because the stakes are so low. And I think they're in vast agreement about where they're going, and they just don't realize that the country really is digging in its heels and saying, you know, we're not going in this direction. And the financial markets, which have been, you know, going along to get along and, hey, just, you know, keep the stock market up by inflating, you know, they're getting to the point where they're looking at the books and they're just like, this is crazy. If this is a company, I couldn't invest in it. You know, how can I support this thing to continue? And so, you know, the voices of reason are starting to speak, and, you know, little people like us, the average American, can go out, blog, talk radio, try to spread the word, try to talk to people, rally the troops, give some hope, and, you know, hopefully some useful political action items to take to your local communities to try to affect some change. But, you know, when you got Wall Street and other people looking at this thing saying, hey, this is a big freaking disaster, you know, then maybe you can do something. But, of course, then the problem is Wall Street's largely in cahoots with this and was financing, you know, both sides of the campaign this time. So
that's called hedging.
You know,
that's called hedging. That way you win either way. And look, Wall Street, you know, is overwhelmingly corporatist and socialist, and most of the people on there, you know, you would think they'd be the big business Republicans. They're actually liberal Democrats. But Wall Street loves all this spending and loves all this debt and money, because Wall Street is really not where our financial, our you know, long-term market forces always trump state interventionism. Unfortunately, in the short term, the state can wreak havoc, and that's precisely what we have here. But the fact is that Wall Street isn't controlling the show. It's Liberty Street. Isn't that ironic? It's called Liberty Street. You can find out, if you're in Manhattan, go to Liberty Street. You will find there, on that street, you will find the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And that's where the show is really controlled, because all this easing, which is nothing but a pretty way of, and a soft way of saying printing up so much money that your dollar is worthless, and basically that means counterfeiting, and therefore the wealth is transferred to those who do the counterfeiting and those who receive the money first, and you, Mr. and Mrs. America, receive it last and are basically screwed. It is the worst kind of tax possible, because it's invisible and you don't notice it. But it robs you of your wealth, which also robs you of your liberty. And the trick which they're trying to play, and Ben Bernanke thinks he's some kind of master of the universe and can play this game, the trick is, you know, to pluck the feathers off the chicken without plucking them so fast that the chicken dies. And that's what they're trying to do to you. It's not that they want to stop robbing you. It's that they don't want you to die in the process. But at some point, every fiat paper scheme collapses, and the masters of the universe cannot control it. It will collapse. Now, generally, that's never been more than 30 years. We've been doing it essentially since 1913, but in earnest since the early 70s, we're going on 42 years. Now, you would think, how is it possible that the Federal Reserve System, their scheme, has been able to perpetuate this lie for so much longer than anybody else? Because for the first time in history, they control just about every single central bank in every country, and they inflate at more or less the same rate so that there is no differential to transfer wealth rapidly to another nation. But even a global fiat regime cannot last forever, and it is going to collapse unless we reverse the process by going back to a stable currency, by going back to federalism, by affirming our 10th Amendment guaranteed rights, and by people getting involved. Now, you know, there's this myth that it was only 3% of the colonists that were in support of the secession from Great Britain. Well, that's a myth. 3% were actively involved, but it was about a third of the colonists were in favor of it. And we represent far more than a third of the country, but it's a third that isn't as active as it needs to be. And so your mission, you know, if you're going to make a New Year's resolution, your mission is first get rid of Boehner. Make your calls, put pressure on your congressman to get rid of Boehner. And then number two is wake some people up. And how do you do that? Share some information with them on Facebook. You can send them videos of what happened in Tampa so they know what the Republican leadership is really like and what it's doing to the grassroots, effectively completely destroying our voice, which includes conventions, caucuses, and primaries. You know, share some information with them on Twitter if you know them there. Share this show. And you can always remember, you can listen to every single archive going back to the beginning of the show on Blog Talk Radio for any of the Blog Talk Radio shows. And we've got some pretty informative shows in there, especially, I would say, since Tampa and since the election. You know, last week we did an entire show on Republican history. You know, we went to the ghosts of Republicans past and Republicans present to look at where we're going in the future. So you are the army of conservatism and libertarianism and conservatarianism, whatever you want to call it, but principled constitutional support. And, you know, your New Year's resolution is to get that information out there. And if I cut you off in the middle of a point, Tex, I apologize. Back to you.
No, you did not cut me off in the middle of a point. But, yeah, I would encourage you to go back to the archives. That first show, you know, maybe you could give it a miss. That was a bit of a testimonial. And we were, you know, trying things out there. And, you know, I'm not sure how effective we were, but, you know. But, yeah, definitely go back to the archives. And, you know, we've just got to get this thing turned around. I mean, that really is the number one priority in reforming the party. So I definitely encourage everybody to go to their local, to get involved on a local level, because really all politics is local. And at that level, you can find out who are the people that you can trust, who are the people that you should be voting for. You can be an opinion maker within your community and make sure that your community is putting forward the types of candidates that you want to see, not only on your local level, but also on the national level. Because where are they getting these rhinos from? Well, because nobody's going to these meetings. And the rhinos are getting through there, and they're being picked up as people who have the rhinovirus, and then, you know, they sort of anoint them as this is the next person that we need to pull through the ranks, and you got to make sure that you have actual conservatives who are going up to Washington to affect change, and people who have a record of standing up to, you know, the powers that be and to the leadership, and who will come down on the side of conservatism when there's a difficult vote or when there's a difficult choice. And you know what? You could make sure that there are so many conservatives that even if one of the conservatives that you like so angers the leadership, they're like, well, you'll never have another position of leadership in that state's caucus again or whatever the heck it is. Their only other choice are more conservatives. You know? That's how you win. Quit
exactly.
Giving them the option to find a rhino in your herd, because they'll find them.
Yep.
And then
rhinos are like zombies. They're like zombies,
yeah.
Right? You know, the freshman gets in there, you know, doesn't know what he's doing, and the rhino zombies bite him, and he becomes a zombie too. If he doesn't become a zombie, like, say, oh, I don't know, Justin Amash, then they've got to neutralize him and eat his brain. And if there were more Justin Amashes, if there were more Rand Pauls and Ron Pauls, then the zombies, you know, the only power zombies have is that they outnumber you, because, you know, they move slow, they're stupid, and as soon as you shoot them in the head, they die. So the only thing they have is the power of numbers. And right now the rhinos are significant numbers. So start shooting them in the head. When I say that, of course, for everybody out there, I mean that figuratively, not literally. It's part of the zombie analogy, okay?
I wish to distance myself from Rex's comment.
Let's get politically correct.
I do not know this man or what he's talking about.
if you're not familiar with the rules regarding zombies, I suggest you look it up, but that's pretty much the only way to stop them. But, you know, the idea is that you've got to put the people in there who share your values and represent your values. And what Tex said was absolutely right. It is all local. Now, granted, right now the federal government has an overwhelmingly powerful influence, which is the problem. And the solution to this problem is not going to come from the imperial city. It never, ever will. And that's precisely why the Founding Fathers gave us the Federalist system. And we are going back to that one way or another. We can do it kind of smoothly by political activism and using the levers of civilized power that are within our hands. We just have forgotten how to use them. Or you're going to witness a true fiscal cliff and an absolute collapse, in which case everything will revert, guess what, locally. So get involved locally. Know who your representatives are. Know who your sheriff is. Your sheriff is going to become a very important person. You'd better know who your sheriff is. Learn the power of the grand jury. You can go to Kelly Mordecai's website, the Hidden Fourth Branch. That's Hidden Fourth, 4TH Branch. Learn about that. And keep an eye on people who are truly principled. Rand Paul, Ron Paul, Justin Amash. There are people to keep an eye on and watch the cues for their leadership to know where things are going to happen. And don't ever, ever make the mistake rhinos make frequently, which is to underestimate Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich is kind of unique because he's been bitten by the rhino zombies, but he seems to have some kind of an immunity where he has minor lapses of rhinoism. But overall, overwhelmingly, his record is one of effective movement in the right direction. And that's what we need to get back to. And I believe we have Robert Jetter from Bard's Logic Political Talk on the line with us also. Robert, are you there?
Yes, Rex. Thank you very much. How are you? I hope you all had a Merry Christmas,
Robert.
And Happy New Year. Hey, guys.
Good to see you. Yes. Happy New Year to you as well, and Merry Christmas.
Great. Thank you. You too. Yeah, and another folks I think we should watch out for is the so-called alternative media. And one thing I know that on the different shows we talk a lot about is
like
for people to go out and...
Is that drag media?
Drag media? Well, yeah, if you could call that instead of drive-by media, you know, perhaps give it a new name, drag media. But you know, watch them as well, because you know, as I say, you know, talk a lot about you know doing your own research and you know find out about the issues for yourself, not just the portions that the you know so-called conservative media is willing to try to feed people. You know, I think that's one thing.
No,
absolutely.
That's absolutely true.
Everyone should either be doing their own research and figuring out what's going on. And, you know, we're here talking about our body of knowledge and what we know and our readings and research into this and, you know, our experience. But we're never going to know what's going on in your community because you live there and we don't. And you should be doing the research on your own as well. So, you know, hopefully this helps motivate you to become involved, also hopefully help you to become informed as to the broader parameters of the political battles that we're fighting, the political battles of today. But ultimately it comes down to you, what you do and what you know and what you have learned on your own.
And to add to that, just so that everybody knows, Fox News does not count as adequate research. It's merely right-wing infotainment. It is the controlled opposition, and it is run by the same Madison Avenue dickheads that run the other networks. We have another caller on the line from area code 843. 843, you are live with Tex and Rex. What's on your mind as we approach the final countdown?
Yes, this is Richard from South Carolina.
Hey, Richard, welcome.
Hi,
Richard.
Thank you. I just dang near gave up. When Newt didn't make it, you know, I hope I done a lot of work for Newt here in South Carolina, and I hope some of my work helped him win in the state. But in our country situation, now we are trying to get rid of the rhinos. Now they show their power down in the Tampa area, and we know what Boehner's about, so. It seems to me, I threw you guys' names out on the websites. Maybe I shouldn't have, but I did. And I mean, you guys know your stuff. And Chris Shipper, he's phenomenal. I'm that guy. I don't know how many hours a day he would average working.
I'm stupid.
But it seems to me. You guys are on the board radio. You guys are doing a good job. But the main, you know, you're up against the mainstream media. And Fox News used to be, what I thought, used to be on our side. Well, we found out different on this last election. Would it not take a major, the American people, Obama got in. I think most of America, even though I think a lot of the people against Obama didn't bother going to vote. I'm hoping that's what it was anyway.
90 million didn't vote, Richard. 90 million didn't vote, so I think the 90 million Americans who are eligible to vote did not vote. So I think that your assessment is correct, and we appreciate your kind words about the work that we're doing, and we appreciate all the hard work you did down there on behalf of Newt. But I would argue that the mainstream media is an overwhelming force because it's got the money and people's attention. And the only way that we can, the only way we can defeat it is the way that the founding fathers defeated the most powerful empire on the planet at that time, the British Empire. And that is that they sat down in the taverns over an ale. Remember, Sam Adams was a brewer. And they talked. Yeah, exactly. They talked to other people. And they weren't just talking. They weren't just talking to other people who think like they do. They were talking to other people who might not be thinking at all, and they woke them up. And every single one of us can do that. And if you think about it, if 1,000 people hear a message and they each share it with five friends, that's 5,000. And then when you take that five, it's 25,000. You do it again, you're over 100,000. That's a force multiplier of very, very significant proportions. And if you do it locally, and if you do it effectively, and if you learn your stuff, and this stuff is not complicated. The Constitution is not a very long document. Economics, you don't have to get into the nitty-gritty of it. You can just figure it out the way you do at home. You know, when you sit around the kitchen table and you go, okay, we took in this much, we can't spend this much, so what do we cut? So it's very simple to know the games that they're playing and what they should be doing. And things like this, if you like the stuff that we're talking about, or at least it's giving you some points to go do your own research, you can share that with your friends. Just go to the archives. You can right-click on the download link, and you can download an MP3 file and email it to them, put it on a CD and give it to them. Tell them to listen to the show or send them to Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. But it's up to each and every one of us. And our New Year's resolution must be that in order to make 2014 count, we all have to get out there and do our part. And I know you did your part when you worked for Newt down there. And now we have to keep doing it. And I agree with you. Sometimes I felt like giving up. At the beginning of this year, I thought, Newt's running. He's got it in the bag. Gingrich is here. He's going to win the primary. He'll go up against Obama. Obama will be crushed and defeated. Well, we saw the Rhino Romney rove machine go to work and take out Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich, and we were all blown away by it. And that's why we got involved here and started doing this. And I think that it can be demoralizing, but there are more of us than there is of them. And together we can make these changes. So whenever you're feeling demoralized, just reach out and confirm each other, because what we're doing is important, and even if others don't notice it, it's still an important thing to do, because this country is worth saving, and the way you can save this country is to get other people active, and let's put pressure on these guys in Washington.
Well, in 2010, the Tea Party was phenomenal. You know, they got out, they done their work, they were everywhere, meetings everywhere, you know, they had their rallies everywhere. I don't know what happened to them, but 2012, you didn't hear about them. I mean, I don't know what happened to them.
Well, the media tried to say they were irrelevant.
Well,
they kept repeating that long enough that it seemed
the media downplayed anything they did do. But I've had Tea Party people to call me for donations, and I questioned, what are y'all doing? And believe it or not, they could not answer me. They couldn't give. No, I said, what happened to you? You know, I knew
they got confused.
In 2010,
they got confused.
But I don't.
They thought they were Republicans
need,
and not conservatives.
I'm sorry?
I said they got confused. The Tea Party was appropriated, and people like Boehner basically confused the Tea Party into thinking that the Tea Party were Republicans and not conservatives. And,
true.
You know, when you're going out there fighting for Republicans who aren't conservative, then you're really not helping yourself if you're a true Tea Party conservative.
Very true, very true, very true. So won't it take – now, you know, I'm wondering if we can get the rhinos – enough of the rhinos out in 2016 to save our country.
It would have to be done in 2014 before that.
Well, the most important thing, the most important thing you can do is change the terms of the debate. And that's what Gingrich was able to do in the mid-90s. He changed the terms of the debate with Clinton, and he was winning an argument, as he says. And look at what Ron Paul has been able to do. Ron Paul's been out there for years. He ran as a libertarian in 1988 after having essentially given up on the Republican Party at the time, eventually to come back. And since that time, has the Ron Paul movement been shrinking or growing? I would argue it's stronger than it's ever been in Ron Paul's lifetime, because the Ron Paul movement, to a large extent, is the movement of the founding fathers, and Ron Paul has managed to change the terms of the debate himself. And so we have two really good leaders with two really big movements and a very loyal base of support, that if we can unite these two movements, we can change the terms of the debate nationally.
There you
go. That's
just what I was going to say. It's a shame that the movements, you know, like the Ron Paul movement, the Tea Party movement, it cannot unite and howl across this country like they did in 2010, and which would give the American people, the non-voters, which would give them light at the end of the tunnel. Okay, maybe our country can be saved. Maybe we can get back involved. But it seems to me that it would take a movement. The Tea Party strength are stronger, as we've seen in 2010, in order to make that happen. You know, I belong to like 10 different groups on the internet, on Facebook. Then groups unite. You know, we all got to unite as one to make a difference. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, Richard, you're absolutely right, and I appreciate that. And yes, I think the fact people have to learn to set aside their favorite pet issue and their favorite candidate, their favorite party affiliation, to focus on core principles, the things that we can all agree on as Americans, that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, that the states created the federal government, not the other way around, that everything should be handled as locally as possible. These are the things that we can agree on, that we need a sound dollar, and that we need fiscal restraint in Washington and have it less involved in our lives. You can get people involved on those principles if you stay away from the things that divide us and get caught up in your pet issues. So I appreciate you bringing up that point. Richard, I'm going to go ahead and put you on mute. You can keep listening, but I do have other callers, and we've only got 23 minutes of other shows. So if there's anything else you'd like to add, please go ahead.
Okay, no, I'll just sit back and listen.
I appreciate the call, and thank you for listening, and we appreciate the support.
Thank you for your time.
All right, we've got another caller on Skype, and this should be interesting. Let's try to keep it civil. The handle is Liberal141.
Hello,
Liberal141, you are live with Tex and Rex. Who are you, and what's on your mind?
My name is Stanley. I'm calling all the way from New York. I'm listening to you guys, and as Americans, we're going to have to be honest, because you make it sound like you don't like Obama and everything, but as Republicans, you look at, let's go first with your economy. A lot of, I think Republican, you believe in the Reagan way, which is the Reaganomics, which is basically you tax less the rich possible, and they will create jobs, and once you do that, they will do a trickle-down effect that basically the middle class will resolve because the rich are more taxed, they have less tax, and they'll create jobs. But that's not true. That never happened. There have been many studies about that way of thinking. Republican, it never works. The rich get richer. They go from $100,000 to $300,000, whatever salary, and the middle class and the income stays the same. It stays 50, 51, and you could do the search from 1980 to 1990.
Okay.
It's been
all
always improvement, and that's what I want to talk first of all. Let's talk about
okay,
that.
Let's talk about that, because first of all, number one, your assessment of, quote, Reaganomics was slightly off. And number two, the reason those things didn't happen had nothing to do with Reagan. That has everything to do with the Federal Reserve debasing the currency. That's why the middle class is shrinking. And the other thing you won't want to make the mistake of is equating the Republican Party with Ronald Reagan or even Ron Paul, because that's clearly not where the Republican Party politics of today are. So don't confuse the two. But here's the thing. I would suggest that you probably have a slightly flawed understanding, and it's not your fault, because most of us Americans, whether we're on the left or the right, have a fundamental misunderstanding of basic economics. And I would suggest you go to Mises.org, that's Mises.org, and search for Henry Hazlitt's book, Economics in One Lesson. It is a great place to start in realigning your understanding of basic economics, because it's not about taxing the rich more, taxing the rich less, and we don't even know who these rich are. It's simply about allowing more Americans to keep more of their private property so that they can dispose of it the way that they desire. And that is what lifts everybody up. Now, the rich get richer when they're connected to the government through a corporatist partnership that allows them to use government regulations to enrich themselves, and they are both on the left and the right. They're both Democrats and Republicans. And really, the issue is not Democrats versus Republicans or left versus right. The issue, as Tex has brought up on this show many times, is between centralized power and decentralized power. And as far as decentralized power goes, I'm pretty sure we can all agree on that. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, but there's one thing I don't understand. When I'm listening to what you're saying, the inequality between the middle class and the rich is getting further and further. You got to look at that also. And there's not been many Republicans really looking at it and say, look, we got a problem. There used to be inequality. There used to be we have 200% inequality between the rich and the middle class, and that's a fact. You could go to many many websites. They've said it. There've been many books.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Inequality. Well, hold on, just to talk about this for a second. Okay, so that's a metric, and this comes up a lot on the left. And although I try not to get into left-right issues, you know, it comes up a lot on the left. And so the issue is, what's the least amount of money anybody can make? Nothing, right? $0, you know, and if you get into debt, you got negative money. But, you know, a growing society that's growing economically is going to have a disparity between rich and poor. That is a measure of progress in society. And if you look at countries like North Korea, what is the one area that North Korea is kicking the pants off of America? Income equality, because nobody has anything. So I would say that's an improper measure of progress. And, yes, some people will do very well and other people won't. Sometimes that's because of advantages of birth or political connection or, you know, just business connections, that kind of thing. Sometimes it's good luck, good fortune.
I'm sorry to say, sir, sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it's because the CEO and the corporation are being greedy. Let's be honest.
Well, exactly.
Wait. You're going to be honest, be completely honest, because as an American, I found that you're not honest with that part. A lot of corporations.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on. Don't come on my show and start accusing me of stuff like that without basis. Have you listened to the show more than just tonight? Hold on. This is my show. I speak first. You speak second.
Okay.
Have you listened to the show more than just tonight?
You seem like
have you listened to this show?
Yes, I've listened to your show, and many times you talk about points that I go do the research and everything. But many times I feel, as an American, that there's some point that I'm bringing as a liberal that you don't take serious. That you think that it's normal for a rich person to get whatever they want. It's not. It's not normal for a person.
Well, I don't know what you mean by whatever they want. You know,
go ahead.
Nobody should get whatever they want. That's called dictatorship, right?
Yeah.
But we're not advocating.
Okay.
Anyway,
go
ahead.
You do not believe that we have a problem in equality in our society?
No. Hold on a second. Why would we want equality? Why would we want everybody to have equality?
I'm not talking.
Right.
Because if you have a more equal system, that means the rich get as much money to a certain degree of what they want, but the people working for them get a high salary. You spend more and everything, and people feel okay. So
everywhere that there's been equality of income, everybody except those at the very, very top connected to the government has always gotten less. I mean, think about it, right? We have one of the widest income disparities in the world. Because
and
of our free market system,
problem,
but we
and,
no, I don't. Because we and, also have the wealthiest
wow.
poor people in the world. We have the wealthiest poor people in the world. Now, if you look at a situation of true income equality, take a look at North Korea. Other than the leaderships and the militaries, you know, that are connected to the government, everybody else in North Korea has equality of income, and they all live in abject misery and are starving. So income equality is a terrible thing.
Having worked for the government and known people that we sent over to Pyongyang to go negotiate those nuclear agreements with them, they were saying they were in the hotels, and even the government can't keep the electricity on. Okay, in downtown Pyongyang, when they're trying to put on their best face, that is how bad that country is, and it's run on essentially this idea of equality. But really, it's not even a communist system. It's just a feudal dictatorship, which is what all this stuff devolves down to. So, if you want to talk about corporations having too much influence over governments. Yes,
no, I'm not
because
talking about that.
Corporations come to government, and they try to enforce regulations against smaller businesses to weed out their competitors, because big corporations can afford the regulations and small corporations can't. It's a way of eliminating the competition.
Well, that's going to be – I'm listening to what you're saying, because I've been reading a great book that calls about that, The Price of Inequality, and they're saying it's doing a lot of damage in our society as Americans. It's a great book, and it's not done by anybody. It's doing by an economist who's a Nobel Prize person. It's not somebody who doesn't know what he's talking about. And he's saying that that's doing a lot of effect in as Americans. And I'm surprised as you to inform people that you're not taking that seriously. Let's look at this. You asked me to go get that book that you said I will. But I want
okay.
you. Can you do the same to go get that book, The Price of Inequality? It's not done by a conservative or a Republican. It's done by somebody who's a Nobel Prize, who knows what he's talking about. And I'm sure that if you did read that book, you would come back and say, we need to talk about this. Because trust me,
I will definitely look into it, but I just want to qualify one thing. Just because someone has a Nobel Prize doesn't mean they know squat. Because remember, the Nobel Commission gave Obama the Peace Prize, and he has killed more people around the world with illegal drone strikes than anybody, including George Bush. So, and he started more wars than George Bush. So, you know, that doesn't always mean anything.
Our listener may view that as inflammatory, so we don't want to, you know, irritate him. But yes, a lot of questionable people have received these prizes. So I wouldn't just appeal to, you know, his background and everything. But I understand, and we certainly can look at it. What I would say is, look, you know, this comes back to a core principle, right? And so I think if we stick with core principles, there's wide areas of agreement, which is that if you as an individual earn something, you have a right to keep it because that's the product of your labor. So if you go and you do work for somebody and in exchange they give you $100 for whatever, that's what your labor is worth, you should be able to keep that $100, right? Because that's the product of your labor. But if the government comes and says, well, I'm entitled to this because I'm the government, now nobody's saying that there should be no tax whatsoever because, you know, any sort of, you know, civil or political society revolves around the fact that you have to have the government to do certain basic functions. But at what point do you draw the line? And, you know, the thing about people being incredibly wealthy, okay, there will always be rich and poor. There will always be people who have a lot and people who don't have a lot, and there are a whole variety of reasons as to why that happens. You cannot legislate equality, and it's undesirable to do so, because if you do that, you take away the incentive to achieve. But people, when they do earn something and they do achieve it, I think that they have the right to achieve it, and the government has to make a case as to why it is entitled or feels that it should be able to get access to someone.
No, I agree.
But you have to remember, and
I agree
well,
with
one
you,
thing,
sir,
one,
that the,
yeah.
I agree with
one,
you,
one
sir,
final
that
thought to conclude, one final thought is,
go ahead.
The wealthy and the rich, I think a lot of Americans, they think of, oh, the rich as like Scrooge McDuck with a big, you know, bulldozer and a bunch of gold coins moving it around the warehouse all the time. And it's not really like that. They put the money in banks and they invest it in certain places. So savings mm-hmm. equals investment. Yes, they have an excess of capital, but it's invested back into the economy to build businesses and that kind of thing. And that is what some people talk about when they talk about trickle-down economics or something. But, you know, Bill Gates on paper is whatever it is, $40 billion. That's what he was back in the day. I'm sure it's less than that now. But that's on paper if you were to sell all his stock. But if you started selling all of his stock, the price of the stock would drop. So it's not really worth that. But on paper, he is. But that money is invested in a company that hires a lot of people and provides us with products that we want. So having someone who's wealthy and then the government taking that wealth away, the government doesn't usefully employ capital. As a former government bureaucrat, I can tell you there is no profit incentive, and if there's a failed program in the government government, the mentality is this program failed because it didn't have enough money. And the private sector, if something fails, they say it failed because it was a bad idea and we shouldn't be funding it. That's one of the inherent differences. Anyway, okay. Go ahead.
Because the thing is, I feel like in that book that says perfectly, it's like if you look at the income for the top percent, like you say, the CEO and everything, compared to the worker who's doing his job, who's working hard, who's a person who's working hard and everything. I'm sorry, the salary, if you compare, it's not the person who's doing 50, 60,000 is getting 50, 60,000 and not more. Even if he's improving things, doing some things for the company, working hard and everything, he will not improve with his higher salary. He could go get the
right. Well, understand that. In those examples, for the most part, you're talking about corporate CEOs. You're not talking about small business owners who, for the most part, small business owners, when they start their businesses, are running in the red for several years and are most their number one concern when they're laying awake at night is if they can make payroll in 2 weeks. That's the small business situation. But when you're talking about corporate CEOs, those CEO salaries are determined by the board of directors. And the board of directors is elected by the shareholders. So the question is, who are those shareholders? Well, in a corporatist system, those shareholders are overwhelmingly those people that are controlling the money supply and the government. But in a true free market, which is what we're advocating and what a true conservative would be advocating, the people at large would be the shareholders, and they would elect a board who would pay the CEO a reasonable salary in order to run the operations of the business, and it would be their choice as to what that wage would be, not the government's choice. Does that make sense?
Okay, that makes sense. So what is the free market that the liberal that you want? That means free market, that means no regulation by the government, or free market means regulation by the government? What is this famous free market?
Well,
do we have a free market right now?
We do not. We have a semblance of a free market. A truly free market is one with no regulations whatsoever. Now, that is not really practical or even in many cases desirable for a large-scale operation like the United States of America. But the fact is that it's about less central control and more local control, where the government would only be there to regulate. That doesn't mean put onerous burdens on business or the market, but regulate it as in to help make it regular by ferreting it out, you know, fraud, and by helping in certain areas of infrastructure which may be problematic for the private market on such a scale to do. But a true free market, the simple premise is that you are entitled to your private property and the product of your labor. And that is up to your talent and your disposition to go and earn what you can and to freely exchange and trade that or give it away as your desire is within the community. Because remember, in a true free market, it's not about the market. See, that's a misnomer of a word, because a true free market isn't an actual thing. A true free market is a situation in which individual human actors are free to voluntarily trade with others. And that's what a true free market is. And on that point, I guarantee you, if you explain it that way to 90% of liberals and 90% of conservatives, there would be agreement. Unfortunately, the elitists in Washington and both parties pervert the terminology and convince us to fight with each other instead of turning our eyes on them.
The last thing you want is for all of us to agree with one another, because then we figure out what's going on and how to fix it.
Of course, I agree with you with that. One thing I love about liberal is true. One thing is I love your policy about what you think about what has American, we should not do nation building and things like that. That's one thing I agree, everything that Ron Paul said about that. That's one thing that he was saying the truth about the blowback, about some stuff we've done around the world, about having too much, why we have so much army around the world when we should be protecting our own. And we wouldn't like China to invade us or other countries to invade them and do whatever they want. I'm against Obama doing the drone thing. That was stupid. I don't understand why he did that. And for that part, for the foreign way, I wish Ron Paul would have been. I think my eyes, it would have been very smart in 2012 if for once it would have been Ron Paul versus Obama. That thing, I think Ron Paul would have done a lot of things that people would have been, damn, I didn't know about that. Because there's some vision in Ron Paul that I do understand, and I do believe that he has a way to say to young people, even me, to say, look, let me go get this book. Look, he's making sense with some things. Look, he's not shy of saying, we've done wrong or something, but being still proud of America and explain to Americans what does he mean with the Fed, what does he mean with whatever he wants to, and he has a way to explain things that us as America would be like, how come you could explain it perfectly like this and other people can't?
Well, because they don't want to. And look, we're about to run out of time, so I can't really continue this conversation much longer, but please feel free to call back, and we appreciate you listening. But I just wanted to let you know that the reason that Ron Paul was so popular is because his message is true. Liberty unites. It breaks apart the false left-right liberal-conservative paradigm. It unites people. And the reason you've got some problems with Obama, as every principled liberal should, is because Obama's not a liberal. He is a corporatist shill, just like Mitt Romney would have been, just like John Boehner is. He works for the bankers on Wall Street, and he does their bidding, which is why he's promoted the wars and the unstable money and the indefinite detention and all this other garbage. And what we all have to do as Americans is get out of this mold of duopoly that we have to pick the liberal on the left or the conservative on the right, when neither one of them is liberal nor conservative, and start looking for people who will actually represent our interests, and then we can work out the differences in the minor issues through our electoral process. So I appreciate the call. Happy New Year. Thank you for calling
in. Happy New Year, too. And please continue your great show. Thank you.
All right, we hope to hear from you again. Thank you.
We appreciate it. And, you know, we'd like to hear from people who disagree with us or who agree with us, but they have a slightly different perspective or think we're neglecting to look at some area. You know, please call in, and, you know, it's all about sharing ideas and coming up with what's best and what will work for the country.
Right on. We've got about 4 minutes of show left live, so I suspect we'll probably spill over into overtime. And unfortunately, we lost Robert, but please tune in to Bard's Logic Political Talk during the week on Blog Talk Radio, hosted by Robert Jetter. We've still got Chris, so what I'm going to do is wish our live listeners, if you want to listen to Overtime, call in 646-649-1013. I don't have time to bring on any more callers, but if you want to listen, go ahead and call in. Just want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And as we approach the final countdown, have no worries and have no fear. The direction they're taking us in is terrible, but it's very exciting because 2012 was a very eye-opening year. A lot of people realized that the Republicans aren't as conservative as someone thought they were. A lot of people realize that Fox News is really not the voice of conservatism in the mainstream media. And I think that the exposure is fantastic because it gives us a lot of hope in 2013 to start getting more people active and remedying the situation. And as you heard from our last caller, if you're truly a constitutionalist and you truly believe in freedom, the liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican duopoly has no grip on you. And even though we might not agree on everything, we agree on core principles of what it is to be an American. And united, we're unstoppable. The oligarchs cannot control us. So, Chris, why don't we throw it to you for some final thoughts, and then Tex and I will start closing out. And for those of you we lose as live listeners, check us out in archives for the rest of the show. Chris, to you. Did I lose Chris? Okay.
I think so. Yeah, I would just say, you know, I was going to come to this point earlier, but we sort of moved on from the conversation. Chris, is that you?
Yeah, I had the mute on. One of the things I wanted to say to that young gentleman was that part of his potential confusion is the fact that he is trying to look at the economy through the broken system of the Fed and Keynesian economics, and that's why we have the problem. It's not a Republican Democrat problem, it's both of them. And if you understand the Austrian economics and you understand, you know, having properly gold back or metal back money, that what you were trying to get him to, you know, to go into the Mises Institute and learning about proper economics, if we had that kind of a system, the government couldn't play the games they're playing, you know. And if we didn't have, you know, illegal constitutional laws that allow them to taxes, we wouldn't have the government that we have that needs to keep stealing money and create this class warfare between producers, you know, wealthy people and non-wealthy people. So, you know, there's where the problem lies, is an absolute lack of general understanding of the economy and how both sides play it against the American people. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say.
All right. Well, appreciate that, and I think you're absolutely right. And, Chris, you got any shows coming up this week?
Yeah, I think I'm going to do one tomorrow. My time, I think it would be 7 p.m. Eastern time, depending on Robert, if he does a show. If not, then I'm going to bump it up an hour. So
okay.
I'll be on tomorrow sometime.
And the name of the show? So they can find it on Blog Talk Radio?
Coalition of Freedom.
Excellent. All right, thanks, Chris. Excellent. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Sounds like you're having a New Year show. I will be out that night, but definitely I encourage you to continue because I think your first show went really well. And, you know, it's always good to have other voices out there, particularly friendly voices, encouraging other people. And, you know, if there are other listeners who are thinking about doing this or getting into it, please do, you know, because the more people we have out there advocating for the cause, the better off we're going to do. But one of the things that I want to say earlier, which I think is one of our problems, and, you know, this applies to the United States, I think, writ large, or at least our political leadership, but certainly large parts of the Republican Party at the moment, if you want to key in on what one of our central problems is, back in the ancient Roman times, they were dealing with a country called Carthage, or the Phoenicians, transplanted Phoenicians were called the Punics, and thus you had the Punic Wars, but they, Rome was concerned about the economic power and the rise of Carthage, and they used to say, Cato the Elder said, that all Rome is a market just looking for a buyer, and the Carthaginians were able to come in and purchase, you know, Roman political leadership to do their bidding. And this was corrupting the Republic and corrupting Roman politics. In the same way, right now, in my opinion, the Republican Party is a market just looking for a buyer. And that's what these consultants did, and that's what the Romney campaign and the Rose were able to do, was just go buy, contribute money to certain people's campaigns, put them into positions of power, and then they felt obligated to the people who put them there and to their money, and they were more obligated to that than they were to the principles of the party that they stood for. And the moneyed interests getting into the party and corrupting it are one of the problems that we're going to have to face. And I think if we look back at that article that Gingrich wrote where he's talking about the 25 questions and the power of the consultants, that's one of the main issues, is the money corrupted the party this time, and that is why we lost.
That's I have to agree with you, Tex. And I know we were doing our last few closing thoughts. I might give you another opportunity because we got two callers that want to make a brief statement. First is Harriet. Harriet, good evening, and I know you wanted to mention something about the Tea Party, so please go ahead and make it brief because we are trying to close out the show.
Yeah, I didn't expect to get on. Thanks a lot.
Hi, Harriet.
I just wanted to say that what's gone in the past is in the past, and we need to concentrate on looking forward. And one of the recommendations is for the conservative movement to enter and start tea parties. We here in Ocala have a wonderful conservative tea party, and Arlene is going to put the link on because you're invited to go into the link, and you will see marvelous information and directions and all the things that this tea party does. And I just wanted to add on to that, that most of what I read in the Tea Party information today connects to what Rex and Tex have been saying tonight. We also, another suggestion is, I don't know what's going to happen with Over the Cliff, Under the Cliff, with Obama, Boyer, I don't know. However, we will know. We cannot fall apart. We have to stick together, and we have to work it out, and we have to fight it out, or we won't have a chance to save the Conservative Party at all. So with that, I'm going to say Happy New Year to everyone and good health.
We appreciate it, Harriet, and Happy New Year to you. And
that
was a wonderful and positive message, and I encourage everybody to take it to heart. And up next, we've got Robert Jetter, Bard's Logic Political Talk. Final thoughts there, Robert?
Yeah, thank you, guys. And a Happy New Year to all again. Yes, and speaking of the new year, I think a New Year's resolution for the folks listening and for you to, when you're talking to your friends and family, is we've talked about this on a number of the all the different shows about how much time is spent, you know, like watching unreality reality shows. And as a New Year's resolution, go out and actually create a new reality instead of, you know, wasting time, and at least in my opinion, it's wasting time, you know, watching something that's not real. Go out and make something real. Go out and help your neighbor by helping this nation, by getting, it's, you guys put out very well, is get involved, because it's going to be very important. A gentleman earlier tonight, who just spoke not long ago, was talking about the Tea Parties and the Tea Party movements, and we're definitely going to need something like that, and I think even on a larger scale to bring this country back to where we once were. And, you know, we still are a great nation. America still is a great nation. But if we don't work hard to keep it, it will slip through our fingers. And thank you very much again.
Thanks, Robert. And you want to tell us a little bit about some of your upcoming shows?
Sure. I see that the Coalition of Freedom is going to have a show on tomorrow night for New Year's Eve. And I am looking to do a show on New Year's Day evening, and that is from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time.
Cool. Fantastic. We'll see you then and appreciate it. And to both you and Chris, Happy New Year. I'm going to go ahead and close out the show now unless either one of you has got anything last minute you want to say.
Take care, guys. Be safe.
All right.
Thanks a lot,
Thanks,
Robert.
You know, I heard Kelly said something the other night on Robert's show that was very profound, you know, as we were, you know, going down to the Newt memo, you know, the
mm-hmm.
how to
the one we didn't get
arms.
To again tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Robert and I, we're on, like, question nine, you know,
yeah.
going through it piece by piece by piece. One of the things that hit me on the first show as we were going through it, moving up to the, you know, his 23 questions was, it just, all of a sudden it just kind of hit me, because when you're digging through his detail of information, you know, I got this revelation. I go, well, he's talking about the Tea Party. He's talking about the Ron Paul movement. He's talking
yep.
about what they did with GOPAC and
yep.
the, and building the Republican Revolution. And all he's doing is just basically in a nice way telling them everything that they need to do, but he already knows what the hell they need to do. Kelly came on the second show, and we were chatting, and he said something very interesting, and that was that it would be amazing to get Sarah Palin, you know, who's huge in the Tea Party, Newt Gingrich, and Ron Paul together and do a national tour and work together, because those three coalitions from the, you know, the Reagan conservatives to the Tea Party movement to the Paul Liberty movement is really the base. You know, it's a
mm-hmm.
huge chunk of the base. And
yep.
and if they joined together, worked out their little subtle differences, and move forward, we would take this country by storm.
Yep, and that's precisely what the Tex and Rex show is about. It's about getting all of those groups together. And that's precisely why
Absolutely,
we did this.
Chris.
And I know that's why the Coalition of Freedom is there. And, Chris, you're right on, and that was a good point, and we appreciate it. Happy New Year to you, and hopefully we'll get a chance to see you tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern.
Yep. All right, guys.
All right, folks. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Tex, you want to bring it home, and then I'll close up?
Yeah, sure. I would just follow up on what Chris is saying and, you know, say, look, we've got a lot of good leaders in our party. The problem is our party or our leadership or our media has been, you know, poo-pooing these people when they're the ones who inspire the base. And when you've demoralized the base for a period of years and then tell them, oh, this is the most important election of your lifetime, you don't vote for Mitt Romney, you're going to lose the country, while, you know, going after and destroying the candidates that they actually support, well, let me tell you, you can end up with a very demoralized party and one that can't win as a result. And so we need to go back and unite all these elements of the party, and we need to be principle-focused rather than person-focused. You know, Gingrich, a lot of people believe in him. I certainly do. Ron Paul, a lot of people believe in him, and I certainly do. And Sarah Palin and, you know, on down the line. But the thing is, as long as these people are advocating principles that we all agree on and that the party is advocating, then it doesn't matter which of these personalities wins. all that matters is the policies that are implemented when they're in office. And so we need to get away from personality and back to principle. And what we really need to get away from, even before that, is a group of people who claim to be our leaders but really are not, and say that they believe these principles, but yet when they're in office, they do the exact opposite.
My goodness, I did better myself, 100%. Well, folks, this is the last show that we will be broadcasting in 2012, our inaugural year, but Tex and Rex will be back in 2013, and we will be better than ever. We want to thank all of our listeners. We want to thank all of the people in chat. We want to thank all of those who call in and share their opinions and ask questions. We want to thank you for sharing our show. We want to thank you for liking our Facebook page. We want to thank you for tweeting our show out, and we want to thank you for downloading the archives and sharing them with your friends. The Tex and Rex Show is not about Tex and Rex. It is about irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. We will continue to deliver this because united as a free people, the oligarchs and the corporatists have no control over us. And if we look back on 2012, you know, we can lament. It can seem like it was a horrible year. The imperialists won. We were defeated. We're on our heels. But the fact is that adversity is what gives you your strength. America was born in adversity. We thrive on adversity and competition. Our free markets have transformed the world because of our response to adversity and reaching out to those in need and being a moral actor. We've lost our way because certain insidious people have elevated themselves to the highest offices of power, and media and politics and corporations that are corporatist in nature and not free market. But this is where our resolve will continue. This is where we will draw our strength, and we will depose these oligarchs and corporatists, and liberty is rising, and the end of the duopoly is coming. We wish you a happy new year, Merry Christmas, and I want you to focus, despite all the festivities, on putting pressure on your congressman and others, if you can, and sharing the information with your friends, to fire that useless piece of beef jerky, John Boehner, on January 3rd, and call the RNC and let them know if they ever want to see any money from you, if they ever want to see money for any of their candidates, if they ever want to have any support, yard signs, bumper stickers, or grassroots activity, which they need because they cannot win without it, read Newt Gingrich's memo, tell them that they have to replace Little Prince Pubic as the chairman of the RNC and put in a real man like Michael Steele when he was there and gave us victories, or someone like J.C. Watts. That's your mission. That's the work that we want you to do. And as we celebrate New Year, let's look to 2013 to be a real year of hope and strength, because united under the banner of the Constitution, with our eye on liberty, we will defeat the oligarchs and we will win. Happy New Year. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.